Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Truth, Love, Energy Radio, where we get out our tools for understanding, nurturing, and building our universe using the Michael Teachings. The most basic foundation of the Michael Teachings is that we are here to learn how to choose and to choose how to learn. For more information on the Michael Teachings, please visit truthloveenergy.com and check out the basic introduction so you too can join in with the growing number of students from around the world. On today's show, we ask, do you protect the real you, or do you live as the real you? The number to call is 646-200-0772, or click to talk. We'll take callers close to the top of the hour. I'm your host and resident, Michael Channel Troy. Enjoy the show. Everybody, this is the first show of 2009, or at least what I'm considering to be the first show, since the last show that we attempted to put together kind of went awry, and I hope this one doesn't do the same thing. So if you're here at the site at Blog Talk Radio, you should see the chat room available. So I'm seeing that it's starting to fill up, so you guys are finding it. And my guests who are on today should find it as well. So make sure you're going to the page where the show is airing and look for the chat room. So sometimes when we talk about the Michael Teachings on this show, we're going to talk about the technical aspects of the teachings, you know, the basics and the foundations and some of the more advanced concepts at certain times, depending on what we, you know, what everybody feels like talking about. And then sometimes we're going to talk about more abstract concepts because our local group here in New York City is pretty small because I hardly ever promote it or anything. So we've gotten very close, those of us who show up. And so we get to discuss things that are a little more personal and a little more intimate. And one of our guests who's always on the show, Sandy, she used to come to these when she lived close by, but now she doesn't live close by. So we found a way to use technology to our advantage and have her show up via video chat or speakerphone. So we get to keep our little group together as well as we can for our little Michael sessions. We call them our house sessions. So we get to talk about things that we normally wouldn't talk about in a group session. So we started talking about just focusing on making some changes in the year ahead, trying to focus on what we wanted to create, what we wanted to transform maybe, or what we wanted to, you know, try to accept. But we were trying to narrow it down to just one thing. And then that brought up conversation about why it's so hard to do that. And the conversation turned toward our sense of having a real you, like the part of you that really wants to shine and be a part of the world, and the fact that we tend to protect that or hide it, or that other people don't recognize it, when even if you do feel like you are displaying it or showing it. So we got into a conversation, pretty emotional conversation about the real you. And so I thought that would be a good thing to talk about today on the show, because I know a lot of people who feel that there's a discrepancy between the real you and what everybody either sees them as being or sees you as being, or what you wish other people would see and they don't see, or maybe your past constantly haunts you, any number of things that keeps you sort of locked in a pattern that keeps you from feeling like the real you is living your life and a whole part of your life. So I wanted to share some points that Michael brought up. And these first points are basically questions that they asked of us during the session. And so I'm going to ask them of you. So you, if you're listening to this, just, you know, center yourself, be open to whatever comes to your mind, and really take the question seriously. And if you want to, make notes in response to these questions, just things that come off the top of your head. So some of the first things that Michael asked is, do you feel there's a discrepancy between the real you and the way you are in the world, or the way that the world sees you? Do you really think there's a discrepancy? Is there a gap? Is there this sense that there's a different you than there is, or a different you that you experience from what you seem to see other people experience of you? And the thing is that this discrepancy isn't really that big of a deal, because everybody has all of these different facets of themselves. But the question would be whether this is painful, whether you experience this as painful, because that's what matters. If the discrepancy is painful, if there's loneliness involved, if there's depression involved, it's like I said, it's not that there are facets of you, or that you might feel that there's a real you versus a public you or whatever, but it's whether this is painful or not. And painful can be any number of things. It doesn't have to be obvious painful. It can just be, like I said, a loneliness or an aching. So do you feel this discrepancy? Do you feel that gap? And then they went on to ask, why does this discrepancy matter? Why does it matter to you, this difference between the real you and this public you, or the way other people see you, or the way you end up living your life versus the way you wish that you were living it? Why does that matter? And when I say why does that matter, it's more like, why does it hurt? What's the pain involved behind that? What causes that pain between, in that discrepancy, in that gap? And pain can also go as far as being numbing. I mean, have you resigned? Have you become apathetic? Have you become, have you just withdrawn from the world, either intellectually, emotionally, physically? So why did this discrepancy matter? Which leads to the next question, from what are you protecting this real you? Why do you think you feel a need to hide or protect or create sanctuary for this real you? What is it that you, what are you battling against? What are you on guard against that you might feel a need to experience this pain in this discrepancy? And then this leads to the next question. What do you think might happen if this so-called real you were to be truly seen? If you were to really be able to live as this real self, as this real you, in your relationships, in your job, and if you were able to be consistent in your idea, excuse me, of this real you, this concept of real you, what do you think might happen? What would be different for you? And then that goes to the next question. The most logical next step would be, can you even describe this real you? Do you even know what that means? Because a lot of people talk about this real you, or they feel like they're not seen, or they're not being validated for the qualities that they feel are important in themselves that they're bringing to the world, and no one's noticing. But do you even know what those qualities are, or those attributes are, or that real you? Do you even know what that is? Have you thought about that? And if not, maybe it's time to do that. So that leads to the next question, which was, in three words, just right now, in three words, how would you describe the real you as you are right now? Just from your concept right now, from the moment that you're hearing this, how would you describe in three words the real you? What is it that is the real you? And that can really get your introspection kicked into gear, because, you know, narrowing yourself down to three words is impossible, and if you were to be concluding yourself as those three words. But it's just about right now. It's just a thought-provoking way to get in touch with how well you actually know this real you, or feel that this real you is described or defined. And when you look at this, when you think about this, is it accurate that no one sees this, or is it accurate that you hide this? Is it accurate that there's a discrepancy? Maybe you'll find that it's actually not particularly true. Now, when we were in the group session, some conversation moved around towards feeling like things from our past, or behaviors from the past, or facets of us that people tend to bring out of us, feels uncomfortable and painful to constantly have to be stuck with that, to constantly feel like you're being pulled back into a different pattern, or your past or behaviors. And so Michael brought up this really great analogy about Mrs. Brady and Jan from the Brady Bunch. So they were talking about how Florence Henderson played this role of Mrs. Brady, and Eve Plum played this role of Jan. But as they grew older and those roles were long gone, Florence Henderson has continued to celebrate this role, despite the fact that she is no longer Mrs. Brady. She doesn't play that role. She's not interested in it. She's gone on. She's moved on. But a lot of people haven't. A lot of people around her still identify her as Mrs. Brady. Whereas Eve Plum, I think that's the right one who played Jan, she grew up to be extremely bitter by the fact that people locked her into this role of Jan. And when she would be on talk shows, she would really get kind of hostile and nasty about the fact, and really be shaming and dismissive of fans who were really, really adoring her for playing that role. And her basic defense was, or her basic attitude was, that she's not Jan. You know, get over it. Move on. And so there was a lot of hostility and defense attached to this role that was so important to her life. So Michael was bringing up this analogy because Mrs. Brady, or Florence Henderson, she embraced this role. She honored it. She also recognized that even if she's outgrown this role, other people are still benefiting from it. Other people are still getting something from it. So the facets, or the roles that we play in our life, the different personas that we have, are sometimes not just for us, but for other people, because whether we identify with it or not, we can't help what other people take from us. So to constantly be battling against that is painful. And so like Jan or Eve Plum, she was locked in this battle between her real self and this character, and she was despising and rejecting that character. And ironically, that made her more attached to it, more defined by it. And so Mrs. Brady or Florence Henderson, she would share in your celebration of her character, but she would not play that role for you in the moment. She knew that this role was important to people and that it benefited people, but she didn't play the role. She wasn't going to be your Mrs. Brady. She was able to lay out the boundaries, and she was able to bring her concept of her identity to the table, without shaming her fans or without hating her past. And so Michael brought this up because they were trying to point out that you don't have to hate your past or your personas or these different facets of you, or resent them or fight them or wish that they would go away or wish that people would see you differently as a means for laying out your boundaries or for growing beyond them. You don't have to hate all of that as a means to mature. You just let it be. If people want to see you a certain way, what can you do about that? You can only be whatever it is that you are. And if in that moment they're not seeing that, you can only do so much. So celebrate all these things. Celebrate all these discrepancies. So I thought that was a really interesting analogy that they brought up so that you could see the difference in how fighting these different facets or personas or pasts can actually lock you into it far more than celebrating them and embracing them and letting people have that. I definitely know from my experience that I have had behaviors in the past that have left and still have left echoes in my life where people are still sort of seeing me through that lens. And the only thing I can do differently, the only thing I can really do is know that I'm growing beyond that. And when they can catch up with me, that would be great. But if not, I'm still growing. I'm still doing what I need to do. So what I'd like to do now is I'm going to bring on the panel, bring on Sandy the Sage and Cypress the Sage. And we're going to discuss further some more points that were brought up in the session. But first we'll talk about these initial points and see what they have to say. So hold on, let me bring them on. Here they come.
Hi.
Hi.
Seriously, you have got to change that music. It is awful.
Well, when you get your own show, then we'll set up your soundboard.
Soundboard.
I think it's cute. But so you guys have been listening. You've been hearing what I was talking about, right?
Yeah, sort of. No, yeah, of course.
Yeah, we've been listening.
So did you have any comments or any thing you wanted to say about that those first things that I've been discussing?
Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, let me just start off. If you don't have any thoughts that come to mind, let's just go through these questions just really briefly. We were all there at this group, so we know, but did you feel that there's a discrepancy between the real you and the way the world sees you?
Oh, absolutely. But I also think that since we had that chat, I've made some changes in that.
Hopefully, people who are listening to the show will also find that inspiration. That's really good to hear. That's really great.
Yeah, I think that it really had a large impact.
And you definitely recognize this as not an unusual experience, I'm sure. I'm sure that even though we all think that we think our experiences are so unique to us and so about us, there's so many experiences that we have that we keep to ourselves that are universal. So many people feel this discrepancy between their real self and the way they are in the world. Cypress, you?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Sandy. It was a very impactful session, and since I struggle with being Jan Brady in my history, and I really related to that, that was a real issue for me. You know, it really has made me look at it in a different way, several different things, during the session that were brought up about, like, the way I talk to people. I get that little baby girl voice and stuff. I've made some serious inroads into making changes.
So you're saying that this baby talk voice that you would get is sort of the character that you're playing that you've outgrown, but you kept playing because that's the pattern you would fall into.
Yeah, and it was very habit. It was like it was a habit, and so I don't want to do that anymore. It doesn't really work for me, and clearly hasn't gotten me anywhere. And so I had a first date this past week with someone, and I was completely aware. Now, I might have done it to the waiter once or twice because I was aware, but the fact is I was aware of it. I mean, I went to Home on Eighth, where we have been a lot of times, and the waiter always remembers me, and so I have like a little rapport with him, so I guess I just get extra happy and my voice goes up a pitch or 10. But while I was talking to the person that I was with, I was really conscious of it. I was, you know, a few times I was aware that it got a little bit high-pitched, and I was conscious. I mean, that's really all that matters, is once, if you want to do something different, you may do it a million times, but once you're made conscious and aware of the fact that it's happening, you have the ability to do it different. And I never really thought about it before. I didn't even believe it half the time when you guys would tell me I would do it. I'm like, whatever, I do not. You know, and I do. All right, yes, I did.
So it's about your, this is a character or a facet of you that you brought to your relationships or your exchanges that served you in the past. This is the,
yeah.
It was okay. It was like, that's what you would have considered to be you.
Mm-hmm.
And now you don't, and it's weird. Like, you experience this weirdness about it, right?
Right. Yeah, and also, you know, I have a very long history with both you and with Nick, and I think a lot of times I have been a caricature of me. And, you know, like I said, sometimes I'm in an okay mood about it, and it's not a big deal, and other times I'm really not feeling it, and I get bitter. And I think that I'm going to have a different outlook on it now. I may still sometimes feel like playing along and it's fun, and there are other times when I may not feel like it, but I think I won't be as angry about it.
Well, that's a big difference.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it takes all that, it takes all the energy out of it, you know, and it makes it okay. And then if you want to play that game, then you have to do it on your own.
Well,
you know
also,
what I mean?
That's a good point, because I was bringing up these symptoms of whether this discrepancy is of any significance, and I didn't list anger, so that would be another one. If you feel hurt or painful, depressed, numb, withdrawn, or angry.
I would get angry, definitely, because I felt like it was inflicted on me or put upon me to do something that I didn't want to do, and I never really took responsibility for the fact that I've done it for so long. How can I really expect my friends to not assume it?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there is a momentum from our behaviors, and it takes a while for the people who have adapted or acclimated to recognize that something is different and to also change their behaviors in response to the changes you're making.
Right.
So
and
that's
that
really
does
great.
It does free up it's resentment and anger that you know, when you really feel like someone is forcing that on you when that's not even true.
Yeah, that's why I think, you know, you hit it at the beginning, Cypress, that awareness is the key. As soon as I'm aware that I'm expected to behave in a certain way, then I am free to choose to do it or not. And all the resentment and everything else kind of goes out the window, because if I decide not to perform as expected, that's my decision. And if I decide to do it, that's my decision too, and I don't have to resent it.
Right.
But in the past, you know, without having any awareness of it, it was just more of a feeling of being out of control and not really understanding why.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, going on to the next question to ask you guys is just sort of to explore further. Why did this discrepancy matter? Like, why does it hurt? Why did it cause you to be angry, for instance? Why did it cause any pain at all? when you knew differently, you know? And
because,
this isn't like a rhetorical question. It's like, really, when you really think about it, like what is it that motivated the defense or the anger or the depression or sadness? What is it that brought that up?
Well, for me, I think it's because I felt like I had evolved and changed, and the fact that the people that were closest to me in my life, the people that were intimate with me on, like, you know, the closest to me at all period would not, it was almost like they didn't see the evolution, and I sort of was angry that I was putting this effort in, and there was, because I will fully admit, I really need acknowledgement and praise. But I have to give that to myself. I can't expect everyone else to give it to me. But that doesn't mean I still don't crave that. And so, which goes to that whole nurturing concept, that I have to nurture myself. I have to be the one that basically praises myself, or I'm aware of my own changes. I wanted my environment to reflect what I internally thought.
Yeah,
and because
exactly.
Because it didn't, it reflected something that I wasn't, you know, feeling in the moment. I would become angry about that, and, you know, defensive. And, you know, Michael has said before about defensiveness is when you change internally, but the external hasn't caught up with you.
Sandy, did you want to chime in?
Well, I guess for me it's a little bit different because most of the time I was not aware of it. I was aware of feeling angry and hurt and upset by situations, but I was never real sure why.
Ah.
You know, I wasn't totally aware that I was trying to change for people. Or of what I was trying to do. I was just aware of being very uncomfortable with myself.
Hmm.
And it seemed like everything was very out of my control. And especially, you know, once I became aware that I was in a lifetime where I was learning to choose and choosing to learn, I didn't feel I had any choices. I felt things were happening.
And what's different today?
Again, you know, what I said just a bit ago, awareness, being aware that, oh, my God, I see now what I'm doing. I speak to this person, and I think that I have to behave in this way because that's what they expect.
When you have no evidence of that whatsoever, probably, and you're just assuming that they expect this. Is that right?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And so once you become aware of what you're doing, at least for me, it was just the most liberating thing. And in so many different ways, I started looking at things in a whole new light. Not only my reactions, but other people.
Well, one thing I would like to say as well is, even though we have these realizations, I don't want to be get too ahead of myself, because even though I do know change can happen in an instant because I've experienced that before, I also am trying to take a softer approach with myself in the sense that if I do get mad because it happens, maybe I will catch myself, and maybe I'll catch myself later than I would like to, or maybe I'll think of it the next day, but I'm not going to guarantee I'm never going to be annoyed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Right, yeah. It doesn't have to be perfection, but that,
right.
Because that awareness can sometimes come like, you know, the net of a bit, at the end of a big drop. It's
that's
like,
right.
Right.
It's like, whoops, oh, well, at least I caught it. At least the awareness is there that I can make a difference, because that's what starts to become, you know, it might be cliche in the New Age circles, but it becomes like a sensory memory. The more you do it, the more you get better at doing it faster.
Right.
So it does take practice. It does take practice. And I think that you defeat the purpose if you're making any kind of change and it's requiring awareness to make that change. You're defeating the purpose if you think it's supposed to happen right away or that you should be good at it right away. You're just adding more fuel to the fire if you start reprimanding yourself on top of it.
Right.
It can't be another thing to beat yourself up for.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my point.
I know people in the chat room can't, or some people can't hear me, and I see that we have a pretty full chat room with a lot of guests. Well, I guess I only see one guest, but I just wanted to say hi to everybody if you can hear. And I'm seeing several, a couple of people saying that they can't hear, and I'm really sorry about that. So when you're listening to this after it's posted, I'm saying hi to you all. I love you. I'm glad you're there, and you're welcome to post questions into the chat room or responses and so that we can comment on them as well. Or you can call or click to talk, but I'm really sorry if you're not able to hear this right now. There's some people saying that there's a buffering issue. Great. Okay, so if, I ask people in the chat room to raise their hand if they could hear. So I'm getting a few responses. Okay, great. So now, what do you? Okay, we talked about why that discrepancy mattered, but then Michael went on to ask, like, what were we protecting ourselves from when we would feel defensive? I know we talked about it in the group, but we could sort of touch on that again without going into a lot of detail. But from what were we protecting ourselves, or maybe not protecting the real you, but like it's Cypress, in your case, like when the real you wasn't seen and you felt that anger and stuff, what that's a defense of some sort. So what was the defense against? I think I remember what you said, but do you remember?
Well, I mean, I can take a stab at it. I'm pretty sure I remember, but I guess my anger and everything is, if the people who are so close to me and have been so close to me for so long can't see the real me, how is anybody else ever going to see it? You know, how am I going to be in a relationship where the person sees me and I'm not this, you know, toy, that I'm a whole person with, and I guess in the entirety of my life, a huge part has revolved around being seen.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reoccurring in my work with Michael over the decades. That's been a reoccurring topic, is that I want to be seen. And apparently I don't just want to be seen because I'm brightly colored. I'd like to be seen honestly and not just as a cartoon. And I do admit that I have done that a lot in the past, and I think that was my way of jumping up and down and saying, look at me, you know,
mm-hmm.
wearing exaggerated clothes and having the, you know, the very bright hair and, you know, and I'm obviously not a tiny person, so it's hard to not spot me, but I became that caricature. And now I have a different skill set. I have more substance. I have more connection with my essence, and I feel like I'm a bigger, more valued, seems like the wrong word, but, you know, I feel like I'm a deeper person, and I have more to offer than just being fun at parties, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, you poke me, and I giggle. That's fun when you're 20, but it's not as fun when you're 40, you know? Now I want to be able to have a conversation about something that matters, and I want to be taken seriously. I don't want people to go, oh, well, you know, the blonde girl's got something to say.
Yeah, well, none of us thought that around you most of the time.
most of the time. Well, I know that, but I mean, that's what I'm saying is, if I feel like you guys can't see me, then how is somebody who I'm just meeting not going to just see the caricature?
Well, that's another angle on the question, too, is, hold on. Okay, that's another angle on the question is, it's not even just the anger that is a part of the defense, it's the fact that you would just so easily and quickly go into the caricature when it was prompted. And so that in itself is you know, its own defense to hide or to buffer between you and another person, this you, your real self and this other person by putting that caricature there when it was prompted, instead of not responding that way, you know? So what is it that...
Well, I think it was easier. I guess I had a lot of positive feedback from my caricature
yeah.
over the years, and so I thought that's sort of like my way in, because once you like me, then you'll listen to me. And so if I am this caricature and this fun toy, then once I've, like, snared you, I guess, I don't know what the, you know, I've got you interested, then I can be more of me. The problem is, once I've already established the caricature, people don't always want to let you really out of that box. And they don't want to listen to you the same way. So I think I fell into it out of comfort, and because I knew it was something that was easily accepted by people, as opposed to who I think I am today. I feel more comfortable now, but I think I went through a period of time where I wasn't very sure that this me would be as accepted as the cartoon me.
That's a very good point. So, Sandy, would you say that it's along similar lines about acceptance and rejection?
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing that I would add is that in my case, I wasn't always 100% sure who the real me was anyway. And so it made it much easier and more necessary to have a role to play, because I wasn't sure who I was. I had a I had a harder time, I think, than most people in discovering my own identity.
Yeah, that's a good prompt to the next question that Michael was asking. You know, do you even know who this real you is? And just to be put on the spot, and I'm asking this of the people in the chat room as well, what if you just have to pick three words right now, just three words off the top of your head, how would you describe the real you? And I would love to see what people have to say in the chat room. So pop in three words that you think describe the real you just right now off the top of your head. Doesn't mean it's the real you in the past, the real you in the future. It's just right now, very casual. And so asking the two of you, what comes to mind for you, Sandy?
Engaged, connected, and amused.
Engaged, connected, and amused. Oh, okay. And why do you think that describes the real you right now? What does that mean?
It's just, it's the way I've been feeling, actually, for a while. I just feel like I'm much more connected to the people around me, to the world in general. I feel like I'm much more engaged in what's going on because I'm not so busy worrying about myself and figuring out what role I'm supposed to be playing. And so I'm more present in the real world.
Wow, that's really a
great
exciting.
That's exciting.
And a lot of things just make me laugh. I'm just finding myself much more amused by life than I ever was before.
Oh, that's really nice to hear. That's really great.
It is.
That is nice to hear. And Cypress, for what comes to mind for you?
I would say kind, supportive, and... Oh, what was the third one? I had it before, and then I was paying attention to Sandy.
No pressure.
I'm going to just go, honestly, I'm just going to go with happy. That was not the word I thought of originally, but I'll get back with you if I can remember it. But I think I find myself to be, even though I have bad moments, I mean, that's, you know, life, I really find myself to be generally happy compared to most people. It's like almost amazing. I mean, I see so many people constantly upset by everything, and I'm not saying there aren't things to be upset about, but it just overwhelms their whole being so constantly.
Yeah, so that's their thing. And that doesn't mean you should feel guilty or shame for your feeling happy. And maybe you feel that way so that you can help bring that to people, because it's not easy for everybody to the real other people don't necessarily have that capacity or find that to be easy to generate. So you know, that's what you do. If you do happy, then that's, you know, the more we're real, or more we understand what we think of as real about ourselves, the more we're actually bringing to our circle of experiences what it is that we can do well, you know, what we can do well. So if you bring happy, instead of it being something you have to protect or hide or tone down, you could find ways of being that with people who are not as happy, and maybe that'll bring some to them through you.
Yeah,
you know?
It is funny too, because there are several people I know who constantly complain that I'm irritatingly happy. And I always think, you know, how can that be annoying to someone? And I'm sure it can. I mean, you know,
when somebody's really happy, like, without being sensitive to other people, then it can be annoying. But if you're really happy, but you're aware, you know, you can't be dancing around and talking about how great life is near somebody who's, you know, dying of cancer. It's like there's appropriate ways to express it without not being that.
Right. I don't think I'm like that. I think I'm too concerned about other people to be, and trying to be supportive of them to be,
compassionate for that.
Just for the record, everybody, I wasn't using that as an example that Cyprus recently did or anything.
Oh, I wasn't thinking that, but thank you for mentioning. I think that I'm very aware of other people's, like, state of mind and things, and I do try to, like, uplift them or at least give them a different viewpoint that they might not have considered. The same way I look to Michael sometimes for that same thing. You know, I try to bring that to people who might not have the same interests that I have or be very interested in changing and progressing.
It's also really important to remember that not everybody has to be like you. Not everybody else can be or wants to be happy. So
that's true.
When you're happy around them, you don't have to ignite it in them. You can see what they have to offer. And if they have a little more somber attitude or a somber edge, there's also something that they may be able to bring to the table. But before I go any further, I want to share what some people are saying in the chat room. There is Marilyn, who is saying that she is warm, friendly, and energetic. Martha is saying compassionate, loony, and excited. Cheryl is saying a nurturer, creative, tired. See, that's really interesting. That's very courageous to include something like that, because we can tend to think that the real us is only positive words, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're not. And so tired is owning the reality of your being tired. That's so good for you, Cheryl. And Susan says caring, kind, considerate, and she added one more, thought-filled. Blue Sword Angel says gentle and strong. So those are that's what people are saying in the chat room. But that's a good point I want to, Cheryl brings up reminds me to point out that it's not always a pretty word. You know, it's not always what we would think of as positive. Sometimes the real you is exhausted.
Sometimes that is me.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Now let's go on to some points that Michael brought up that led to what they considered to be a key in taking care of this real you, or allowing it more freedom into your life and bringing a sense of wholeness. So they first said that you must understand, at least in part, what you mean by the real you. So those three key words, like if you just throw up three key words that you think describes the real you when you feel kind of unsure, that can really help you get some footing as to where you are. And only having to think of three is not that hard, but it's enough to get you thinking and introspective. So if you're having trouble defining the real you, don't forget that it's never going to be a conclusive process. It's just the real you as you see yourself now. Michael also pointed out the isolation, or sometimes when we are in positions where we're not as social, that's important because that's how we get to know who we are. Because we don't want to, that's outside of the feedback of people, but we get to know who we are on our own. But prolonged isolation can help you to lose your sense of self. So socializing is important because that also helps you to get to know how the world experiences you. But then again, prolonged or like social indulgence can also leave you not knowing who you are because you're constantly living off the feedback from everybody else. So it's really important to know that there are times when you're going to need your alone time and your social time. And if there's a big imbalance in one direction or the other, it can lead to these feelings of pain and these feelings of depression or anger or numbness or whatever. They also went on to say that to assume that the real you is of more value or more important than the one that is interpreted or rejected or accepted is just not valid. The real you is no more valuable or important than any of the other versions of you that are either interpreted by people or rejected by people or accepted by people. They're all important. The real you is just your own idea of who you are. The other yous are facets that are just as valid and contribute to your wholeness. So if you want to move towards a more a sense of wholeness in yourself, it's important to not fragment yourself by thinking that the real you is all you are and that's all you have to be or that's all you want to be seen as, because all those other facets are just as important. And they, those facets can't always be controlled when it's somebody else's interpretation. They also pointed out that if you're rejected for quote-unquote who you are, because that's one of the things that's scary is for people is to let people see who they think they are, because then if that's rejected, then what's left? But Michael's saying, don't forget that if you're rejected for who you are, that's still not all you are. There's still all kinds of different facets of you and other people to interpret you. So one person's rejection or disappointment or if you lose them in your life, that is because of a personality discrepancy or issue. That's just one person. It doesn't mean it's not going to be painful, but it does mean that it's you haven't lost the real you and you have not been truly rejected. And then they go on to say, you must mature eventually to a point. This is part of a maturing process, that you get to a point where you're no longer worried about these discrepancies between your definitions and the definitions determined by other people. If one facet's rejected, there's more. And if one facet's accepted, there's still others. So it's an indication of our maturity that we start to lose this sense of distraction over these discrepancies. Do you guys feel that too, just in the week since that session, that it feels more mature, like more of a wholeness?
Definitely.
Yeah, I definitely feel more of a wholeness. I don't know if I would call it a maturity or not, but I just feel much more of a, I don't even know exactly what I would call it, but it's
presence.
It's a connection. It's a presence. Yes, it's a presence, and it makes me more aware of other people below the surface as much as it does myself.
Now, the next thing that Michael brings up is where we start to lead towards the crux of this whole session. But they said to us, which I'd never considered before, but a lot of our behaviors, when we don't want to behave certain ways or we don't mean to, or just a lot of our behaviors come from what Michael says. They said, you are in need of nurturing beyond your understanding of that need. And that was pretty profound for me to read or to hear, because I never thought about that.
Could you repeat that again, Troy?
You are in need of nurturing beyond your understanding of that need.
Yeah.
And I'll elaborate on it because they went on to say that this speaks to the part of you that is perpetually left behind by you. They said that a lot of us grew up to a point where we thought we were grown up before you were grown up, regardless of your age. So because we think that we've grown up, we really haven't dealt with some of the nurturing needs that we needed. And those things continue to be left behind by us. And Michael went on to say, the part of you that still seeks that nurturing, though you do not understand this underlying motivation, the part of you still seeks that nurturing, though you do not understand this underlying motivation, so you protect it, you hide it, as you deal with the world in relationships. This part of you is dealt with as one would deal with a crying baby that is ignored, left in another room, or taught to behave properly. So if we think about that gap between the quote-unquote real you and the world, that gap is the baby. That gap is the indication of our need for nurturing beyond our understanding that we actually needed it. So if we acknowledge that, oh, I need some nurturing, I need to be taken care of, I need to receive some healing, if we acknowledge that, that's going to help deal with that discrepancy as well. Because Michael said then next, responding to that need is vital for your maturity and your wholeness. And they went on, then, here's the three resources of nurturing. Because Michael was saying that a lot of what we've already talked about, we've talked about it in a lot of different ways, but a lot of what we talked about is sourced from our not getting the nurturing that we need because we don't understand that we need it. So when we catch ourselves behaving in certain ways like this, what we've talked about today, it can be a clue or a hint to the fact that you need some nurturing. You need some patience. You need some kindness. And sometimes there's not going to be anybody around to provide that. So Michael wanted to focus on what resources we have at our disposal at any point. Because we always know that there's going to be people that we might be able to turn to for it. But what can we do when we're alone? So the first thing they suggested was live as if you have a soul. I remember Sandy commenting on the audio, well, that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense now. So Michael went on to elaborate to say, if the real you is seen and is not accepted, does that mean you're no longer real? Or if the real you is seen and accepted, does that mean you're more real? I remember your response to that question, Sandy, when Michael said to you, are you no longer real? You said, yeah.
Exactly. I cried so hard.
So Michael was pointing out that living your life as if you have a soul, you're always there to observe, even if no one else is. Your existence is not dependent on others' observations or actions. Even if you reject yourself, you're never rejected by your essence. And then they went on to say, this is not meant to be an intangible comfort, but to convey this higher validity. Don't forget that you have a soul. You have a soul. You have a higher part of you that includes you, knows you, cares about you, created you, likes you, loves you, finds your life to be an adventure, whether it's mundane or extraordinary. And then they went on to say, you don't have to accept that you have a soul or that it likes you or loves you, but they did suspect that most of their students feel that this concept of the soul is true. But if you prefer not to call it a soul, then call it whatever you like. Maybe it's some grander capacity of the brain for comprehending the bigger picture of your life or something like that. But assume it's some bigger part of you. Because Michael said one of the problems of the older soul is that he does not live as if he has a soul. and they emphasize live. And I have to say that however intellectually I have understood or felt I understood the concept of the soul, and I do this work, it is easy to forget. It's easy to forget to think in those terms, especially for me, because since this is the work that I do, I'm constantly contradicting it with my skepticism and my, you know, the questions of people around me that make me think, you know, because I have a lot of atheist friends. And so do you guys feel the same way, that this is something that you go, oh, yeah, I have been living like I'm not feeling this sense of a bigger version of me or a bigger sense of self? Is that true for you guys, or has it been?
Well, for me, definitely I have those times when I am consciously connected and really feel that, but not most of the time. Most of the time you're going about the busy work of your day, and you're not thinking in those terms, and it's not like you can put a post-it on your front of your glasses reminding you as you're busy, you know, at the grocery store or, you know, or working. I have a tendency when I have time, like when I'm on the train and you're by yourself or I'm walking down the street, those are the times when I feel the connectedness to my soul and to the universe and things like that. But when you're busy doing busy things, I'm not sitting at my desk at work thinking about how much my soul loves me, you know?
Yeah, well, that's a hard one to do, because it feels sometimes, for even us older souls who truly grasp the idea that a soul may be valid, and I mean, working with Michael, assuming that there's validity to that, it's still, I mean, how do you live as if you have a soul? What does that mean? And I think it means acknowledging, it's sort of a trust. If you look at the pattern of your life, if you look at the overall picture of your life, it's not that bad. It's not, the meaning that's found in your life has to be come from you. You have to figure that out. You have to create that yourself. And I think that feeling like you have a soul can help bring meaning, can help you to find meaning in some of the things that are confusing, or some of the things that, or it can help you at least get through certain experiences that, until you do find meaning.
Right.
But what does it mean living as a soul to you guys?
Well, one
living
of the,
as if you have a soul.
One of the things that I think that I'm really working on, I certainly haven't perfected, but it's brought to my conscious mind, is about caring for myself. We do a lot of things that are destructive to ourselves regularly. And I was actually talking about this recently, that there are times you do things you fully know are the wrong thing to do. They are not healthy for you. They are not good for you, but you choose them anyway. And I think part of living as if you have a soul is to make a different choice in those moments, where, especially when you're consciously doing something that is not good for you, to make a different choice, because you make those choices out of a need for nurturing or comfort or to pacify yourself. You don't do them for any other reason. You do them because they're easy and because you feel you need it.
Or, well, you're talking about habit, too.
Yeah, and out of habit, as opposed to
so
doing
living
some...
as if you have a soul is trying to at least comprehend the bigger picture of your life.
Right, and living as if you are loved and cared for, and you're not in need of constant pacifying.
And for those of us, or for those of you who are more spiritually inclined, where you don't have a question of whether a soul exists or not, then Michael means this very literally, that this is about, don't forget that there's this component of you that knows what's going on with your life, that you can ask for help, that you can call on for presence and to bring in for better decision making. And so you know, it can be taken literally or it can be taken figuratively. This live as if you have a soul. But that would be one of the first places you could get your sense of nurturing when you need it. The next one is to treat yourself as if you matter. And Michael said this is fairly self-explanatory, but this speaks to those of you who may not trust or know that you have a soul. So whether you're an atheist or a deeply spiritual person, it can't hurt to live as if you matter. Treat yourself well, tend to your needs, care about yourself. You are the only one who is with you 100% of the time. This brings the personality into the picture, so even if you don't believe you have a soul, you can still make a difference in providing self-nurturing. When you're mopey and you feel sad or vulnerable or martyred, treat yourself as if you matter. It matters that you feel that you care and that you're sensitive, so treat yourself as if you matter. How does that strike you guys to hear that?
I think it's just the best advice ever, and what I've tried to do with it is in those instances, I try to ask myself what I would do or say to someone else who came to me and said they were having this particular feeling. What would
I offer them? That's great.
And try to offer it to myself because that's the bottom line to me of what self-nurturing is, and it never crossed my mind before that day.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Sandy, because most people are so great at giving advice to other people and not so great
at giving
advice.
Or comfort or affection or whatever they need.
Right. That's right. That's right. Whatever they need. I mean, we're so willing to open ourselves up to our friends and to people we care about, to help them through difficult times, and we're less likely to do it for ourselves, which is something that it's that whole point about doing things that are good for you, doing things not just because they pacify you, you know, but doing something that really is going to be productive and caring and helpful.
Right.
Yeah, and we're also not so bad at providing it for other people. We're not just providing it for other people, but we're a lot of times okay with accepting it from other people, but not doing it for ourselves. That seems to be one of the biggest problems. Okay. Is that the, you know, when you're alone and you're thinking you want this nurturing that Michael's talking about. See, this is really getting to the heart of what Michael was talking about, that our need for nurturing goes beyond our understanding of that need. Is we're not grasping that we can do it. We can do it ourselves, too. We don't have to wait for someone to provide it. We need to ask for it from other people if necessary, but also we're there. We're there for us. We can be there for us, and that's what Michael means by to treat yourself or live as if you matter. So you don't have to wait for someone to respond to your needs when you can do it yourself in a lot of ways. And a lot of people, I think, don't think it counts. Why? Why wouldn't it count? Why wouldn't it count even more that you're the one who is sitting with you, you know, alone in the dark, and telling yourself everything's going to be okay, or that you're loved, or that, you know, to trust your next steps, or whatever it is that you need. You know, be your own guru, be your own healer, be your own affection, all of that stuff. It's really beautiful to think about providing that for yourself in times when you might need it.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, and I spend a lot of time alone, and I'm not a person who ever gravitated toward alone time. And so now I'm beginning to wonder if maybe Essence didn't set this up for me so that I could learn this.
Well,
Same thing happened to me, Sandy. I was alone for several years in Raleigh, and it really makes a difference. It really does.
It's difficult.
But you come out on the other end with a completely different, almost like respect for yourself, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think that this is probably one of the most important lessons in my life, and I'm really grateful to Michael for this.
And what you just said before about maybe my essence set this up so I could learn this, that's one way of living as if you have a soul, by seeing it as, if you have the concept of a soul who is a part of the creation of your life, then you can look at that situation and say, well, what can I get from this? Because my essence may have had a great idea, and let me see if I can figure this out. But it can also go the other way and not be so literal, that maybe essence didn't set it up. Maybe your soul didn't do that. Maybe you did that. Maybe you got yourself into this position because of your choices, and you're finding meaning in it now. You're doing that. You're the one that's finding meaning. So I love how it's these first two things are covering those two bases, where you can look at it from the higher perspective of your soul, or you can look at it from, what can I get out of this? It doesn't matter how I got here necessarily, but what can I do with this now that I'm here? And that's living as if you matter, you know?
Yeah.
I really like that. Now, the next one is the next thing that they said that would help to provide this nurturing that we don't understand we necessarily need, is to stop defending and start caring. Because we can tend to just go into defense mode or protection mode, even against things that we know there's no threat whatsoever, and live on guard constantly, protecting ourselves and forgetting to care about ourselves. So stop defending and start caring. And Michael said, protecting yourself can only get you so close to the nurturing that you need, especially when you're protecting yourself against intangibles, such as opinions or perceptions or feelings. You can't really protect yourself from those things. They're intangible. They're not true threats. The point of your protecting yourself, though, is lost in that you do not then provide the nurturing on the other side of it. So they went on to say, and I thought this was really clever, you've appointed yourself protector. Why haven't you appointed yourself as caretaker? And this, recognizing this, will help you to heal any divisions within you. You're not just your protector. You're not just your defender. You're your caretaker, which is if you really elaborate on what that means, is really beautiful. It's about taking care of yourself and providing for yourself and understanding that some of the things you do that you don't want to do or you wish you didn't have to do, you're doing because you care about yourself. And you're missing the point of why you're doing that. If you had a child to take care of and went to work every day knowing that this child is benefiting from it, it's no different than you're doing that for yourself. That if you're going to your job every day and you don't like it, but it's what's feeding you and giving you a home, it doesn't mean you're locked in that, but it does mean that the reason you're doing it is because you care about yourself. And recognizing those little things that you do like that can really help to bring more of the sense of your caretaker self, the real you, out into the open and embraced. What do you guys think about that?
Well, that's something that I thought of a while ago as well, like when I get frustrated because I have to get up very early and I'm tired or I have to drag my ass all the way to New Jersey. You know, those kind of things where I get like bitter and angry, like, oh my God, you know. Every single time that happens, I remind myself why I do it. I do it because I care enough to have money to pay my rent, to have security, to feed me so that I can continue on. I mean, you know, I'm that's one thing that I'm really good at doing, is reminding myself what I do to care for myself in that respect. I'm not as good as reminding myself of other things I could do to care for myself.
Okay.
You know, like making better choices with people and ice cream and things like that.
Well, Michael pointed out in the session before that sometimes caring for yourself is letting yourself have that ice cream.
That's
There's
true.
A big difference between indulging in it out of habit and out of for escape. But there's a, you know, when you're, for instance, if you always think about caring for yourself as if you're a child, as if you had a child or a dog or a cat, you would be happy to provide, you know, ice cream for her as a treat. But you would feel a little bit weird if you were saying your kid could have ice cream every night.
That's right.
Know? So it really is just bringing yourself to an awareness of being a caretaker for yourself, not just a defender, but a caretaker. So it's not about not having ice cream, but like you said earlier, it's about making the conscious, aware choices from from a bigger picture perspective as well.
And appropriate choices. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Because you're not going to feed your kid ice cream because they had a bad day. You know, I mean, you're not going to say, this is what you can have for dinner because your day sucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. But might come home, skip dinner, and eat a tub of ice cream because you had a bad day. But you wouldn't do that to your kid.
Right. Although,
yeah.
Just to make a side point, I never eat a tub. That's Nick.
I would
have a bowl of it. That's true. And, you know,
I was speaking more like one might do that, not you as in
yes.
You.
I thought I would bring that to everyone's attention. I do not do that.
Well, I would. I'd eat the whole damn tub.
Yeah, I can't. For some reason, I'm really happy with the bowl, but I can't do that. You would think I could, but I just really can't. But anyway, my point is that, yeah, the difference is not, because there's nothing wrong with treating myself, and I'm actually probably quite good at that. But it's have something nutritious to eat first to actually fuel your body for the next day. You know, you don't want to wake up exhausted because you didn't give your body any fuel. You just gave it sugar and pacified it for a time, and maybe you felt better for a half an hour, but you went to bed and you wake up the next day and it's going to be harder the next day because you didn't do anything to feed or give yourself nutrition as well as the treat.
Yeah, exactly. So being the caring.
Right.
Being
you would have.
Think about that. Would think about the fuel aspect of it, not just the escape aspect of it.
Right, right.
Well, what I'm going to do now is I want to go back over these points just really quickly before going to the last question here. So Michael had said you're in need of nurturing beyond your understanding of that need. That's really important to ponder and consider. And responding to that need is vital for your maturity. And I think what they mean by maturity is that the sense of evolving, the sense of growing beyond, you know, building upon what you have experienced and comprehending those experiences. That's maturity. And the three resources of nurturing that we have at our within reach at any time is to live as if you have a soul, literally or figuratively, to treat yourself as if you matter, and to stop just defending or protecting yourself and start caring or being your own caretaker. Those are really important. I wanted to go over those points. And then as a daily reminder, after you've thought about these things and pondered them, one thing that you can put on a piece of paper or someplace with the, you know, or in your mind, whenever it comes up randomly, or as a part of your day, but it might be nice to ask yourself every day, what does caring for myself look like today? Because it's not always going to be the same, but asking yourself that simple question every day or whenever it's necessary is going to keep you not only connected to a sense of real self and feeling less defensive in the world and you know, helping you stay connected to your soul and treating yourself as if you matter, it's going to put all of this together into a way that you know, just that one little phrase can pull it all together by just saying, what does caring for myself look like today? And some days you're not going to need as much care as others, but it's going to keep you aware and help you to make your choices more consciously. So that's something you can do every day. What does caring for myself look like today? What do you guys think of asking yourself that? What comes to mind when you ask yourself that now, if anything?
Well, I think that I guess because I'm sitting in my room with the shutters all open, it's bright and sunny, and I've been out already once today, twice today, and I don't even need a coat. I think caring for myself today would be going outside. just a little fresh air. I mean, even it's spring starting, and we've been closed up for a long time, even though I go outside all the time to travel. You know, it's been cold, you've been bundled. You know, get a little sun on your skin. To me, today, that's really seems like something good for me.
Yeah, and if you hadn't asked yourself that, it might have been just another routine day where, you know, it's Sunday.
And I looked out and said, "Oh, it's sunny, how pretty."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mhm. And taking that little extra time to take yourself out into the sun and take a nice little walk, maybe with your dog, window.
Yes, we had a very nice walk this morning. He was very perky and enjoyed it quite a bit.
Sandy, what comes to mind for you? If anything,
I can't say that anything is jumping right up for me right now. You know, Cypress is right; it is a beautiful day, and it's going to be a good one to spend some more time outside. But I'm not sure for me personally what caring for myself today actually entails. I'm going to have to give it a little further thought. But I'll think about it while I'm outside.
Maybe something that was good and caring for ourselves today was participating in this.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, that's the point I wanted to make is that when you ask what does caring for myself look like today, it doesn't have to be something really clear and defined or something to do. Sometimes caring for yourself today is just asking yourself that question, just knowing that you are in a state of awareness that when something might need to be taken care of, that you're there for you, that can be enough.
Yeah, that's true.
What does caring for myself look like today? Asking this question. It could be that easy.
It can be that beautiful.
It can
be that simple. Very good points.
So that's pretty much the show. And I see that we had some callers, but no one pressed one to get on the air. So I'm not going to bring anybody on because we only have a few minutes left. But I wanted to ask you, did you have any or I want to look in the chat room and see if there are any comments that I can add to this.
Everybody likes ice cream.
Well, there were a lot of responses to the ice cream comments. but it looks like Marilyn is getting a lot of this. There's some great responses coming up for her, it looks like. And, yeah, that's true, Martha. So she's asking, there's an option for calling in to just listen to the show. You can actually just call in and listen on the phone. And if you press 1, that's sort of raising your hand to say you want to be on the air. But if you don't press 1, that means you're just calling in so that it's easier to listen on the phone. Well, someone just raised their hand. Let's see who this is. We'll get one caller in here to hear some comments. 414 area code. Hello, 414. Who is this?
Hi, it's Mary Lynn.
Well, Mary Lynn, hi.
Hey. You know, this is so hitting home because, you know, like I had mentioned, with chronic pain and awaiting my upcoming back surgery, it's like I absolutely have to be conscious of this issue. And so it's interesting how I felt a need to be in this chat room today. And it's like, yes.
Oh, that's really great. And that's a good point that this isn't just about like, oh, I'm having a bad day or I don't want to go to work. This is, you're talking about serious pain here, and you're still using this information to apply for that kind of situation. That's really great to hear.
And I just wanted to add, too, that I don't know what your other essences are in the room, but I know
all
that,
sages.
Okay. Well, you know, that with this warrior stuff that I've got going on, it's like, you know, going into action without consciousness can create a breakdown of the physical body. At least that's been my experience. So this consciousness of what we can do to self-nurture is just, that's, it's like, that is
Is it hitting home?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
No, I agree with you 100% about that. It doesn't matter our role or our centering. That happens to all of us where we build up this, I don't know what you'd call it, I guess a lack of awareness or a lack of consciousness in our behaviors and our routines and until our bodies slow us down or halt us altogether. And, you know, that can be seen as an inconvenience or as an opportunity to really take stock and to look around and comprehend just how unconscious we were for a while.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that everybody was in that situation. People get sick or get hurt for all kinds of reasons. But, you know, there are times, like in your case, where you're realizing, like, there's an element here that's about being aware, being conscious, and taking care of yourself and not pushing and being a caretaker during this process. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And especially, I think, if other people in this room are in a profession where they are needing to be of service to other people, you know. On a conscious basis, you know. So.
Yeah, that's really important. When people are in a position of service, it can be really easy to leave yourself behind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really very good, because that's kind of like not putting your oxygen mask on the airplane so you can take care of somebody else. But yeah, it's really important to keep yourself taken care of because then you're losing your strength in being able to care for other people. It becomes a drain, or it becomes a distraction, or an escape even, and you don't want it to be for those reasons.
Yeah. What I've experienced is that in the healthcare profession, it is not encouraged at all, or I should say very, very minimally is it encouraged for the service-oriented professions to care for self first. So it's pretty
sick. I hope that
industry
changes. That seems so ironic,
yeah,
knowing how well you have to be in shape or psychologically stable or any of those things in order to care for another person. So that is surprising.
Yeah, you'd think, but
yeah,
that's why I think our healthcare industry is so out of balance now.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So.
Well, I just want to say, Cypress is on here. She's Mary Ellen's daughter, as you know.
Yeah,
Mary Ellen's the person who rode with your mom to and from Chicago.
I know.
You haven't met, though, have you?
No. But
okay.
I am aware.
Hi. Oh, this is great.
And, of course, you know Sandy from all the chats and stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, Sandy, you got quiet.
I'm just listening. Good stuff.
Well, thank you for calling in. We're going to be closing out the show here. It's closing down. Marilyn, thanks for calling in. I'm just going to put you on hold so you can still listen.
Oh, sure.
You don't have to. I'm not going to disconnect you or anything.
Okay.
But thank you for the feedback, and it's really great to hear that you're able to get something out of this.
Oh.
And we'll be thinking about you, too, and helping however that works to...
I feel it.
...to help lift some of this pain or process it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So
good to hear your perspectives, Marilyn.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay. Oh, good. I'm glad we got Marilyn on the air. Any closing words from you guys? We got about 5 minutes left. Anything you want to throw out there? Any thoughts for the day for the listeners?
Let me get my book. No.
Oh, you're going to do a random thought of the day?
I was just teasing.
Well, for the Michael students who are listening to this, who are, you know, thinking, where's the Michael stuff in this? First of all of this came from Michael in a group session, and this is the kind of stuff that can come up in more intimate sessions. It's not all about the technicalities and the structured system that they have that's called the Michael teachings. In fact, this is sort of being able to put those... After you've got that structure, you work on things like this. But if you want to tie this in somehow, this whole concept of real you versus public you or a private you. All of this has to do with true personality versus false personality. And anytime there's some sort of sense of fragmentation or restriction on your sense of self, that's the false personality. In the Michael teachings, that's when you're living from a more restricted place. You're in the negative poles of your personality. This isn't a bad thing. That Michael wouldn't describe it as a bad thing. It's just a place. It's a place of restriction, division, fragmentation. It's false personality. It's sort of not, as opposed to true personality, where you're embracing who you are, you're fluid in understanding how you are different and adapt in different situations, and that you feel that you're honestly expressing yourself and that you feel as if you're behaving freely, openly, without limitations. So this is just one way for you to tie it in, so it's not like, where's the Michael stuff? So this is all of, we've been talking, everything has can tie back into, you know, if you want to study further, into the true personality versus the false personality. And maybe we'll have a show about that, talking specifically about that in terms of the overleaves and the personality profiles, so that people can use the tools that are in that system to consciously move themselves in that spectrum of between the positive and negative poles. So maybe we'll have a show about that. Would you guys like that sometime?
Mm-hmm. I think
mm-hmm.
that would be great.
So I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. I'm going to say goodbye to you guys and make a couple of announcements. And then this show felt so much better than that last one. I'm so glad this went well. Thank you guys for being a part of it.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for doing it, Troy. It's always fun.
And thank you guys for being in the chat room. And, yes, now that you know, you can call in on the phone. The only problem with that that I can see is that I can only fit up to 5 callers. So if everybody's calling in and nobody's – no, and two of the slots are used up by my guest panel. So I may be sneaking one of you on the air or cutting you off in the future if I need to let some callers get through. But that's just a heads up. So thank you guys, and I'll see you at the next show. It's the first Sundays of every month at 1 p.m. Eastern Time at Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, then there are podcasts that are released that are not live, and you can find those all at truthloveenergy.com. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Cypress. I love you guys.
I love you, too.
Bye-bye.
And be your own best friend.
Aww. All right, everybody, keep it real.
Bye.
Let's leave it.
Bye.
Leave the show on all these cliches. Keep it real.
For real.
Bye-bye. Bye. Okay. So just so that everybody knows, if you're really interested in learning more, if you'd like to study the Michael teachings, it is a beautiful philosophy. It's a great way of looking at the world, but it is not a religion, and it usually doesn't contradict with religions. It's just a perspective, and it's really nice. You can find out more at truthloveenergy.com. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back next month. Check out all the other podcasts at truthloveenergy.com. And if you want to learn more about me, your host, go to my.truthloveenergy.com. Have a great day, everybody.